All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Thank you. Welcome to the Connected Classroom. My guest today is Angie Olson of Lucky Little Learners, and we're going to be talking about falling forward in the fall. And what we were just talking about prior to you guys jumping on was the idea of some of the challenges that we're facing, not only the coronavirus, but now the worldwide concern about how to be racially sensitive in terms of how we're teaching and the ideas of some of the teachings and the statues that are coming down. And I'm finding out about people all over the world Winston Churchill, for example, I had no idea, had a significant negative opinion of people from India. And all these different things are coming up, and all of it is happening as we're beginning to think about the next school year falling in. And Angie has joined us today so that we could talk a little bit about that. And we would love for you to join in as well. So if you have questions, please either send me a note on the chat line, or go ahead and raise your hand. And we'd love to have you join us, because we enjoy talking to educators and hearing what you have to say about this as well. So, Angie, welcome. Thank you for being here today. I know you're busy and you're doing a lot this summer as well. Would you tell our participants a little bit about yourself and Lucky Little Learners and kind of some of the stuff that you do around social emotional literacy?
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Angie Olson. I have taught grades kindergarten, first and second grade. And I now run a curriculum company over at Lucky Little Learners, where we support teachers, primarily K-3 teachers, with the support they need, whether it be resources they need in the classroom or the support to go along with that and how to use them, or developmentally appropriate practice. We also have a membership for teachers called the Encouraging Classroom, and that is for teachers that want to foster social emotional learning and teach character education in the classroom. So I love what I do, and I love being plugged into the teacher community.
Great, and we love having you here today. Hey, Jen or Patricia, I'm gonna go ahead and unmute you if you wanna tell us a little bit about yourself as well. May have a small crowd today. If you wanna say hello, I'd appreciate it. Jen, are you there? Can't get Jen to unmute. Okay. How about Patricia? There she is. Patricia, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm from Baltimore, and I saw the topic, and I just jumped on, so I'm still kind of getting settled.
Well, we appreciate you being there. How are things in Baltimore?
We're opening a little at a time. I think we're into phase two. Things aren't bad as it is everywhere else with the extra COVID situation, but yeah, we seem to be doing okay. It's a lot of crime right now, but it's a lot of issues. I mean, there's issues all over, but it's okay.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to talk about today. Angie and I were mentioning that before the show started, and thinking about the challenges that we're facing as educators, and really being able to deal with the multiple challenges that we're going to have in the fall. So that's some of the stuff we'll be talking about today. And if you have feedback, I'd really appreciate you sharing it with us as we go forward.
Okay. All right. I work at the library.
Okay. But you also have a unique view from a very unique city. I went to the University of Maryland. I used to go to the Preakness all the time. So I've been to Baltimore more times than I care to remember, because of some of the fun stuff that happened there. But, it's a very unique city, and it's probably a very racially charged city right now with some of the other stuff that's going on around the country as well. So you have a unique perspective, which we appreciate.
Yes. Yes. I like the city. I live in the city.
It's beautiful. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Patty Lynn, are you there? Patty Lynn? Oh, okay. I don't know if she wants to join us or not. Patty Lynn? All right, so Angie, let's get going. And one of the things I want to point out before we start, and this is for our participants as well as for the people that are going to be watching the recording later, which I think more people do than not, especially in the summertime, is take advantage of multitasking and doing some of this stuff while they can clean the house or whatever. You mentioned that you worked primarily with K-3, but in my mind, when I think about social emotional literacy and so forth, what I think about is that it really starts in those grades. And then what ends up happening eventually is that most people get caught up in curriculum. So you might be a K-12 or a K-14 or a K-16 educator, but SEL is absolutely critical across that K-16 spectrum, but it doesn't really get talked about much after third grade. And so I think your views are really important regardless. I mean, I want to touch upon that for educators that aren't in that K-3 situation.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I can't speak from experience past third grade. You know, I see what I see at the elementary level. And I think, I do think that we're really strong in that the primary grades, as we call it. I think we're very strong in teaching those skills. And I don't know what happens really. I mean, I think that there is such a push for content and academics and the go, go, go. But I don't think we can ever let that piece go, no matter how old they are, because I think that without that piece, the academics aren't as effective, you know, whether that be ninth grade, sixth grade, kindergarten, you know, really, I think any age level, and it looks different, of course, on the different age levels, but I think that you can't not teach or not have that piece in what we do every day as teachers.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed, and I've worked in the K-16 environment, I've worked across that spectrum. And so one of the things that I've noticed is that teachers tend to get embarrassed, and they tend to think that it's childish, and they tend to think that it's not their job. And I don't mean it's not their job from the perspective of it's not my job. It's like, yeah, somebody else is probably talking to them about that, or they're probably learning that at home, or they probably already know this and it's redundant. And so part of the thing, and as I think about this fall, and what really, really concerns me is the idea of connection before content, because everybody is going to be coming into the schools with just, it doesn't matter what grade you're at, they're going to be coming into the schools with an amazing amount of questions, an amazing amount of concern, an amazing amount of uncertainty, and the ability to connect and the ability to really put yourself, you know, and it can be embarrassing. It can be like, oh, I don't, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable. I think about doing that in front of middle schoolers sometimes. Middle schoolers seem to think that all adults are idiots, right? It's like, it just, you're almost like when you're around them, there's just this energy of don't even talk to me. You have no idea what's going on. But do you notice that sometimes in teachers that there tends to be a bit of a sort of a self-awareness about it?
Yeah. And I think different personalities lend to different strengths too. And I think some teachers are just really good about nurturing and opening up that conversation and having that environment to feel, make your students feel safe. And I think that's the first step in it all, is just, you almost have to, as an educator, open yourself up and be vulnerable, because you know that this is for the better good. Create that environment where the kids are feeling safe to talk, to open up, and they don't feel like this has to be, it's like parenting. I mean, you know, as a parent too, I mean, conversations can be super awkward with your child, or they can be comfortable. And it's all about how we go about, it's not necessarily a lesson that creates that. It's your everyday interactions and how your environment feels and the way your kids feel in that space and what you allow for. And so I think, yeah, I can see what you're saying for as far as middle school, high school, older they get, the more awkward that feels. But I also think back to even my own years in high school a long time ago, but I remember there were certain teachers that just made you feel like you could have those conversations, and then some that we just never went there. And I think it's our job as educators. I mean, of course, we can't just teach the content. We can't, especially as we think about what we're all going through right now and in the spring and continue to in the fall. And we have to, if we're not good at it, we have to figure out how to get better at it.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you. I want to remind me to get back to this point, because I want to get back to the idea of connecting quickly, because a lot of the teachers that you and I know talked about the importance of the fact that if it does come back and there's a second wave, that it was so important in the spring of this year that everybody had a chance to connect with their kids. Yeah. And so it wasn't nearly as difficult if you'd been working on those connections to stay connected with your kids in the virtual classroom. But that's something that we need to talk about quickly connecting in the fall in case this thing does boomerang. Yeah. And there's a situation where we're out again. But an interesting anecdote, I used to work in middle school, and I was working with a group of kids, and one of the young ladies that I worked with, had been working with her for about 6 months or a year, whatever, and that school asked me to do an assembly where all the kids came in at 2:30 on a Friday afternoon with their book bags and jackets, and it couldn't have been more chaotic and silly, and they all came in, sat in their friendship groups, and that girl that I worked with was right in the front. She was in a circle of kids, and she was sitting there, and all she did the entire time was talk to her friends. She never listened to a word I said. She didn't hear any of it. And so when I went to her class the next time to see her the following week, she came running up to me, and she said, "Oh, my gosh, I remember that assembly was amazing." And she verbatim, she told me every single thing that I had talked about. Hmm. And so I think part of it for us is that the kids look like they're bored, and they look like they're uninterested, and they look like they don't care. But I think it's really important for us to go past that. Mm-hmm. And to go past, and especially now when we're dealing with the racial issues and some of these things like that, is to not accept it and to just say that it's obviously I don't need to talk about that because nobody's affected by it. But there's so many kids that just, they hear and they feel and they see everything we say and do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And not everybody expresses themselves the same way. You know, I mean, there are kids that are going to, like you said, they're sponging it up and you don't realize they're sponging it up. You know, some that are just not wanting to show that vulnerability side themselves, but they need to hear that. And they need to see that. And they need to feel that. And so, you know, honestly, some of those kids that aren't expressing that or acting like they even care at all are probably the ones that need it the most.
Yeah,
and so exactly, we can't just try to do a read the room and look at and pull your audience and go off of facial expressions for sure.
I think that's part of being an adult educator. When you think about that, the adult mind and so forth. And when you're in, and I want to talk to you about the conference you did recently too, but, and see how that went for you. But the idea of being able to read a room and get a sense of where everybody is or people understanding and so forth. But so many kids have become expert at just sort of, you know, doing what needs to be done to get by, you know, and they're not going to ask questions and they're not going to get engaged. And so our challenge with them, and especially if we go back to the virtual classroom in the fall, how do we keep them connected? And yeah. I don't know, are you talking to your teachers right now during the summer? Are you trying to help them kind of prepare for this?
Yep. So one of the things that I'm treading carefully on is because I feel like teachers need, right now they need to rest and they need grace and they need time and they don't, a lot of them, usually in June, we still have a good chunk of teachers that are still hungry to learn things. They want to hear things. They want to learn things. They want to read things. And right now what I'm finding, I just pulled my Facebook group a couple weeks ago and I'm like, what can I give you right now? And they're all like, we just need to rest. And you know what though, like I think that that's so important. You come back to that saying, I mean, you can't pour from an empty cup. If we don't allow ourselves to rest come fall, if we don't allow ourselves to decompress because we just went through an insane few months with distance learning, which was not comfortable for anyone, it's going to be hard to come back in the fall with a vengeance, you know? So I think that's the first thing is just allow yourself what your body needs. What does that look like? And for everybody, it's different, you know? But just really being aware of what you need as a teacher and give yourself that, you know, give yourself that grace. But as far as in the fall with connecting, I couldn't agree more. And I think that, I mean, I think that's part of what's causing anxiety with teachers. We don't know what the fall looks like. We don't know if we're going to be doing virtual learning 100%. Are we doing blended where we do a little bit of both? Or are we going to be completely in the classroom, but then are we wearing masks? And are we not leaving the classroom and not getting, you know, so I think that's causing a lot of anxiety with teachers. But going back to the connection piece, I think whatever hand we get we are given and dealt, I think we have to just make building those relationships the number one, and I mean, a focus more than ever before, because if the right virus is going to come back and do another big swoop and pull us all back out of our classrooms, it's relationships. We have to get those in place as strong as we can for whatever time we have.
But, and again, we talked about this earlier about the racial inequality that we're dealing with in the United States and around the world in different situations. We're also seeing that in the virtual classroom as well. So, you know, I've argued a lot that in situations like that, that money has as much to do with inequality as does race, and not to discount race as inequality as well, but the economics of it also has a lot to do with it. And so many of our kids who don't have the economic reality that some of our other kids do, if we do get thrown back into that we could be losing those kids again, you know, in terms of just their inability to connect with the internet, or the fact that the family has limited resources, or they have one laptop, or the mom needs it to work, or whatever it happens to be. All of these things are going to be questions that come in. And so I know what you talked about, and I think it's super important that what your teachers are asking for right now is a break. But I also feel like at some point, and this is something that I plan to do at the end of this month and really start to reengage with my clients and the people that I work with and the teachers that I connect with, and really kind of come back to them, because I don't know if you feel the same way. I think it's going to be really important that this summer not be just a time to rest and relax. I know we have to get going, and I know we have to get organized and take a break and feel, but we also have to stay connected to these kids, because so many of these kids are out of sorts. I know we're still feeding them meals in a lot of situations. We're still doing a lot of other stuff. You know, at what point do we have to just kind of go, okay, take a deep breath and jump back in? I mean, I'm wondering from your perspective, when you think that, obviously you said it's different for everyone, but when do you think we have to really start thinking about, you know, August 15th or August 20th?
Yeah. Well, and depending on the classroom, I mean, some states are extended school year, so they start up in 2 weeks, you know, but I think from my opinion, my perspective, what I plan to do is kind of let June's kind of our rest month, our relax and do what we need to do. And then come July, I'm going to start pushing a little bit more with the professional development and really providing teachers with more opportunities to, you know, giving them book ideas or podcast ideas or, you know, different video trainings or, and then really also having the conversations going. I mean, I know there's a lot of teacher Facebook groups out there, and I think that they can be a great place to turn to learn from each other. And I mean, talking to teachers that are also in the classroom like you are, and what are you doing? How are you meeting your students' needs? And you know, you talk about meals in the summer and all of that, and every state looks different, every district looks different. And I think we can learn from each other, because a lot of this is an area, I mean, we haven't had to go through an exact, like what we're going through right now. And so I think not reinventing the wheel and open yourself up to, you know, basically an online PLC, you know, an online community of teachers that, you know, can talk about that with you and figure out what you guys can do to meet those needs of your students.
Yeah, because, you know, again, we talked about before the show started, and one of the things that you had mentioned was trying to read African-American authors or African-American teachers about experiences, and we talked about healing-centered, you know, thinking about healing-centered schools as opposed to trauma-informed schools, and we think about my trauma does not define me, and I'm learning more and more as I read African-American educators talking about the situation. And I think it's important that we don't forget that that's not, obviously the Black Lives Matter, and that is important as well, but we also have other children from other parts of the world that are coming into our classroom as well, and being able to be socially sensitive to what they're dealing with and the challenges that they're facing as well. And that's something that you were talking about too. And I think, it just seems like it's so much right now. You know, I feel for the educator, like they're being tasked not only to figure out the virtual classroom, but to figure out other things as well about how do I handle all this? You know, how do I talk about all this? Do you have a plan how you're going to kind of try to approach this? Or are you just going to stay strictly with the SEL part of it and kind of go from there?
Yeah, when it comes to the culturally sensitive part and anti-racism and everything, I mean, I will be the first to admit I have a lot to learn. And
yeah, me too.
I think that's the first step, is admitting that we have a lot to learn. And I think that it's our responsibility to learn that and find the resources you need to educate yourself on that topic. And there are a lot of, you know, Black educators, like from my own world, there are some amazing Black educators that, for example, Instagram is a platform I spend a lot of time on. And I have followed tons of accounts lately that are teaching me so much and just opening my eyes. And one thing I've learned too is that we're not, it's not necessarily their job to teach us, but they've been doing work for years and they have a lot to provide and to teach people that want to learn about it, and we should want to learn about that. And so I think it's our responsibility to seek out the platforms, the books, the things to teach yourself, because there's so much to learn, and it's not just a month of learning either. I think when come fall, I mean, I think we've got to figure out ways that work for ourselves, whether that's a podcast in the car on your way home or whatever that looks like, to constantly be feeding yourself that information so that you can be better. That whole quote, when you know better, when you know better, you do better.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we have to take that approach. And, you know, we talk about like teachers and feeling burnt out, and there's just so much to do, and it's kind of a lot. And yes, it is. And so I think that that's where you just have to, I guess you have to really listen to yourself and listen to your body. Feed yourself as when you can, and rest when you need to. If you're feeling anxiety, take a step back and then go back in again, you know? But I think it's essential.
So I wanted to talk about that conference you did recently. You were supposed to be, actually last time you were on, we got Zoom bombed, which I was kind of proud of. I'd heard about it, but then we actually got, it actually happened because my wife sent out the link on Facebook or something like that, and we got killed. Mm-hmm. Which was kind of funny. It was kind of disturbing when it happened, but now yeah. I think back on it, it was kind of a badge of honor that in the midst of all this, we actually got Zoom bombed.
Yeah, it was my
but then you were telling me that you were doing a huge conference, an online conference that you did. What were you talking about first and foremost, but then what was your takeaway from what the teachers were feeling from that show?
So the conference itself is called Teacher Heart Out. And it's basically a conference for educators K-12, and usually it's in person. This year it's virtual. And so for the conference itself is actually July 13th through the 14th. And so all of our sessions were pre-recorded. And so okay. I had to pre-record all of my sessions. My sessions were all things math, because that's where my master's degree is math. So I tend to feel especially comfortable with that topic. So my sessions are on using a deck of cards for math games, and then how to develop math fact fluency in a developmentally appropriate way. And okay. So those are my two sessions. And the conference itself, like I said, is K-12. It has a variety of sessions, a variety of everything from, you know, literacy to math, to social emotional learning, to even, like I think even roles for principals, I think even have some administration, you know, sessions as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really good conference, and they've been selling tickets like crazy. So that's exciting.
Yeah. When it's the 13th and 14th, Teach Your Heart Out.
Yep. Teach Your Heart Out. Teach Great. Your Heart Out. And I think it's tyho.com, I think, is the website if you wanted to learn more.
Good. And so then again, and we start thinking about the fall, and we start thinking about what we need to be doing to connect, and thinking about the importance of the quick connection. In your experience, you've worked in the K-3 environment, and you've been in those classrooms before. If you were going back to the classroom this fall, what would be your priorities 1, 2, and 3 in terms of getting started? And say it's August 15th, and you're going to go back in and not knowing it. This thing's going to come back, but what would be your priority in the first month of the school year?
So my priority would be to develop the relationships immediately, not only myself with the students, but students with each other. And I think, I mean, there's a variety of ways we can do that. I think that morning meetings, at least at the elementary level, I don't know how that would look at the high school level, but morning meetings are, we never skip them. never skip them. It's the first 15 minutes of the day, and we have that time together. I think that when your kids are coming in from the bus, from being dropped off, wherever, you are right at the door. Even if that means that you have stuff to do. I've even seen teachers that'll just pull up their little roller chair and sit it at the door and work on the stuff. But then when the kids are coming in, you set your stuff down, and I think you look at them in the right in the eyes, and you greet them with using their name. And you know, you and I have talked about this, but it's an opportunity to get a read on, you know, what kind of situation are they coming out of? Did they go to a birthday party last night? And are they really excited and they're going to want to talk about it all day? Or did they have a fight with their mom, or did their parents have a fight, you know? And so that's an opportunity to get a read on where they're at. Another way to develop a relationship, and we can go into each of these, but even on their way out, you know, sometimes school is the safest place that they're going to feel. And so on their way out the door as well, giving each child their opportunity to have that one-on-one time for you, even if it's just for that 5 seconds, 10 seconds, you know?
I think owning the door, that's one of the things that I talk about all the time with teachers, is own the door. And I've seen less and less of that over the years as I've started going into more classrooms because of cell phones and the short amount of time between breaks and those kinds of things where teachers are trying to get a hold of something else. Whether it be checking their email, and it's all important stuff, obviously, and that. But I do think that owning the door in and out, whenever students are coming in or leaving your room, that's an opportunity, absolutely, to connect with them. The morning meeting you talked about at the K, at the younger level, but you know, the advisory period was put into middle schools and high schools intentionally to encourage teachers, homeroom teachers, that 30-minute period of time. Was not supposed to be a study period. It was supposed to be a period where teachers took the time to really try to talk to their kids and bring up an issue. And I've been doing for years, I've been doing high school advisory videos, and nobody watches them, but I'm just trying to create a conversation around that because, you know, again, we go back to that idea that maybe it doesn't feel comfortable, or these kids already know this stuff, or this is stupid, or they're going to think it's not interesting. Mm-hmm. And being able to remove ourselves out of that situation, because morning meetings are critical. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're four or you're, you know, 24, it's absolutely critical. And I think it's super important for my family. I think the breakfast time for us to all check in with each other and see what's going on and talk about the day, dinner times at the end of the day. Those are critical times that, you know, we've been talking about that for family issues for years, yeah. In terms of doing that kind of stuff. But advisory periods are really, really critical. I would also ask you what you think about doing the technology survey immediately as well, and really getting a sense of if this thing goes online, who's got access to what, so that we can start the process of getting kids the stuff they need.
Yeah. Yep. And I know, like I said, every district's different. I know that in our own school district, that's something wonderful that, and really we live in a high poverty area here. And what our local internet companies have done is those that don't have internet, they get them internet for free. And so we've had complimentary internet access March, April, May, for our kids throughout the remainder of the school year. And I know that they'll continue to do that. And so I think that, I mean, I don't know if all, you know, if all internet companies would do that, but I think it's worth entertaining and looking into, because I know our district's not the only one doing that. I've heard of a lot of districts that have that option from their local internet provider. And that's helped obviously a ton of our families that don't have internet otherwise. Yeah. So I think, like you said, a digital or electronic poll to figure out the needs immediately is a really good idea. And obviously those that aren't going to have internet are going to need the paper copy. And then just, I mean, as teachers, follow up, and those that didn't return it on paper or digital, give them a call. It's not going to probably be your whole class, but that's going to be really important information for us.
I'm just texting. I'm sending a note out to our participants to make comments or to ask questions, please. I know as an online educator, that's something we should be doing about every 10 to 15 minutes. Have you thought at all about if we do go back online, some of the things that you're going to be working with your teachers on, because I know that a lot of us are kind of new to that. And I know we can send out packets and we can do those kinds of things, but the connection piece, I think, has to be at least virtually.
Yeah.
You have to be at least virtually present, you know, if you're going to connect. Yeah. So have you thought about that at all in terms of what you're going to talk to your teachers about in the fall?
Yep. So I know a lot of districts are using either Zoom or Google Meet for their connection piece with the kids. And there's a lot that can be done through that. You know, you can do your own virtual morning meeting. You can do your own virtual lessons through there, or even your own virtual show and tell. I know that with my own daughter's class, they'd had a lot of that where, you know, they either had a show and tell or they had a house scavenger hunt, or you can do different things on Zoom to kind of build that community as well. Zoom, Google Meet, whatever platform. But I also think that they need to see us as much as they can. You know, yes, they can do packets. You can send them websites. You can give them apps. But I think that, you know, obviously in person is going to be more ideal. But I think as much as you can to provide some videos to your students and through lessons. And I think teachers sometimes get stressed about that because they're like, oh gosh, like now we got to do video, but it's, you don't, they, your kids don't care how perfect it is. They don't care how many likes and ums and stutters you give. You can absolutely, it doesn't have to be perfect. It really doesn't. They just want to see you. They want to hear your voice. They want to see your mannerisms. And the way you deliver information is going to look completely different than their parent, if their parent even delivers it at all. So I think that just doing anything we can, getting creative and thinking outside the box on ways that we can reach them and letting those insecurities go when it comes to some of that as educators.
Well, you know, and I would speak to that. I know for you, for example, that it, you know, getting online and doing these kinds of virtual things wasn't always very comfortable for you. And it sounds, you know, it seems to me like you've really overcome that and taught yourself how to do that in the last at least year or so since the first time that we connected on one of these kinds of situations. So congratulations to you. But I think, you know, I think that's part of it too, is for teachers, oftentimes they're constantly every year, they're being told they have to learn something new. They have to learn a new curriculum. They have to learn a new social emotional literacy program. They have to do something. And I think a lot of teachers get fed up with that. And they just, they're kind of tired of, you know, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to continue doing what I'm doing. I know what I'm good at and those kinds of things. But in this situation, it's different because you are an expert of being able to connect in the concrete classroom. You're an expert of delivering information, and you're an expert at modeling the kinds of things that teachers need to do in order to educate children, and you reach the majority of kids in your classroom. And the ability to take that online and the ability to do that virtually, I think more than anything has to do with just that kind of that self-critique, right? That I don't look, I don't like the way I look, or my face is all weird, or, you know, I got a pimple, or, you know, and you feel like you're in high school again, right? You got to put makeup on or do something like that. And I think that probably takes away from the humanity of it. I think that kind of takes away from the personality of it. And it's like, hey, I'm here. I didn't sleep that well last night, but I'm talking to you and I'm connecting with you. And I really feel like in my line of work, that's what's really worked over the last 17 years for me, is just being honest with the kids.
Yeah. Well, and they feel that. I mean, they feel that. They feel that genuine connection and that honesty and that, you know, mutual respect and that you care. And I think too, you know, if we don't stress about those things when we're teaching them in person. So why would it change if the camera's there? You know, I mean, I think a lot of teachers had a lot of anxiety at first that they're like, oh my gosh, the parents are watching, and holy cow, like we've got the, like a magnifying glass under, you know, over top of us now, and we've got to be so on. And I think that lasted a week, and then they realized that it's not what you, you know, it's not as under the microscope as you thought, you know. And I think too, what we saw here is the teachers that didn't put that time in because they're like, gosh, this is so much. Like, are you kidding me? Now we got to do this. And chose that route, and they just sent packets home. not as successful. The kids were more issues at home. They learned less, they completed less work, and were even more disconnected from schooling than the ones that would show up even with the imperfections, whether that's on Zoom or whether that's through video or whatever that looked like. So.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me because my whole career, schooltoolstv.com, got started because I was working at an elementary school. I was doing my master's in counseling, and the elementary school that I was working at had a daily live video feed that went out to all the classrooms, and you had to do it via a camera in the library, and each teacher was responsible every quarter or whatever. There's like 20 teachers, so every 20 weeks they had to have their class go in every day during that week, and they did the Pledge of Allegiance and they did all these kinds of things, and the teachers absolutely hated it. They hated it. They didn't like being on camera. They didn't like being on camera first thing in the morning. They didn't like the fact it was closed circuit TV, which isn't the most, you don't look your best in that kind of light. And they didn't like it at all. And so my thesis professor came in and said, you guys, you either write a thesis or find a project to do. And I went to the school and said, can I take over the TV show and make it a daily social skills thing? And they're like, absolutely, because they didn't like it. So this isn't something new. You know, I think oftentimes teachers are a little reluctant when it comes in. And that's kind of what I think what we're talking about today. There's so much new, there's so much change. And you're getting the impression, and I'm getting the impression, that a lot of teachers right now, hopefully it's just for the month of June, are just kind of burying their heads and going, okay, I just need to get organized again. But my concern is that, you know, come fall, come September or August or whenever it happens to be, that a lot of teachers are going to be just, I mean, they're worried about their own health. They're worried about the health of their family. They don't know if they're going to wear a mask like you talked about. Are they going to be in the classroom? Are they going to be, is it going to be that kind of a program? I mean, I think we have a lot to really prepare for between now and then, because there are, whether it's 50% of teachers or 30% of teachers or 10% of teachers, that are really going to be in a very distressed situation when school starts in the fall.
Yeah. And I think that is the reality, and I don't think we can sugarcoat it. I mean, I think that is the reality. And I think that's why, you know, I think it's, that's why it's going to be important that we take care of ourselves. And, but also I think we need to just, we need to lean into each other. And, I encourage teachers to look beyond your building. You know, I mean, we are in a day and age where we have a plethora of ways that we can connect with other people. And even just this alone, I mean, the teachers that are going to be watching this video alone, is they're doing that next step towards, you know, preparing for the fall. And so I think there's plenty of, whether it be Twitter, I mean, there's a whole world of teachers on Twitter that are learning from each other and whatnot there. There, obviously Instagram has their own community of teachers, Facebook and Facebook groups has their own community of teachers. And then, you know, even within your building or even like surrounding towns, I think reach out to each other. I mean, we don't have to go through this alone. And I think that when you have others to go through it with, and you're learning from each other and you're listening to others, and even just knowing others are feeling these same things can be reassuring sometimes. I know that in my own Facebook group, I hear teachers saying, oh my gosh, I'm so glad others are, you know, I'm so glad you're dealing with this same frustration. You know, kids are unmuting themselves on Zoom and that's so frustrating. And then they're like, what can we do about that? And it opens up a conversation. And so I think that a lot of that can happen organically, but you can't just stay in your own little bubble. You know, there's plenty of opportunities out there to grow beyond what you have right in your little classroom.
Yeah, but I think that's going to be too, is the question of education, because I think there's going to be a percentage of teachers who are okay with the way they used to be. Right. And so that percentage of teachers, and I would tend to think it's going to be the more tenured teachers, the ones who are, you know, like, you know what, this is more than I bargained for. And I can, you know, I can call it quits now, or I can do whatever. But I don't know if that's going to lead to a surge of new teachers coming in. I mean, in California, where I'm from, we simply can't get teachers. You know, it's not like people are lining up to take this job right now. I think people have all realized since the pandemic hit just the important roles that teachers play, but not only the role that they play as educators and mentors, but also the roles as first line defenders and the role that they play in providing children with that basic sense of security that they need for 10 hours a day. And they also provide an incredible service for parents who want to go to work. And so all of these things have all of a sudden become they're all in play, right? And so there's a sense that teachers, there's going to be a percentage of teachers who are just like, you know what, this is a lot. It's a lot to deal with, and it's a lot to go forward. And we started to talk about this last time, but the idea of maybe some changes in education in terms of that hybrid model where we think about, you know, maybe the kids are only in school for 4 hours a day, and then we're thinking about the Boys Club, Girls Club, or the YMCA as a place they can go after school, or we're thinking about, you know, different ways in teaching life skills and things like that. And that's kind of my thought process going forward is, I think this is really going to fundamentally change education and how we think about it. And I think there's a much bigger challenge that we're going to face in the fall, because I can't imagine that going back to the traditional schooling is going to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this is a silly example, but right at the beginning of all of this, there was a teacher in our district that said, you know, the concern the principal had was, how are we going to make sure these kids get lunch? And one of the teachers said, he's actually a football coach, he said, well, why not deliver the meals on the bus? And everyone like kind of laughed. They're like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. Like, what? And then they find themselves are doing that. And I think that nobody even dreamt that this is how the world was going to look, that we'd be walking around with masks, that our restaurants be shut down, that we can't go to each other's houses. And like, no one would have dreamt that that would have happened. And here we are. And I think you're right. I think that this is an opportunity to really look at the face of education and decide what are some things that need to be changed that have really should have been changed a while ago. Because I think that people are more, I think that there's a lot of opportunity to change. I think there are people are more open to change than they ever have been in the past. I feel like the Band-Aid's been ripped off, and now people are like, okay, let's figure this out. This is crazy. And that's how I feel. I think we have an opportunity to really evaluate what we're doing and what's working and what's not working and how can we fix that.
And I really want to get teachers involved in that conversation, you know, so that I'm looking forward to being on your Facebook group and doing another show with you coming up. But I want to talk to your people as well, because I think it's really, really important that teachers do let their voice be heard right now. And whether it's on the pandemic issues, the race issues, whatever it happens to be. But teachers for a long time, I think, have kind of taken, although we have seen it in the last couple of years, we've had teachers kind of coming out in terms of not being paid and some of the challenges that came. And obviously those challenges, a lot of them came from 2008, which is scary when you think about the pandemic and the economic crisis that's caused. But I think it's really important right now that teachers' voices be heard, because I do think that they have a new sense of themselves and how important they are. And it's really, and for us to provide platforms and opportunities like this show and on the Learning Revolution and have teachers talking to each other about this and basically having their voice be heard, because, you know, the homeschool environment, they say 1 to 2 hours of schooling a day for K-3 and, you know, 2 to 4 hours a day for kids that are like 3-8, and maybe 4 to 5 hours a day for high school kids, and that includes homework. And so if we think about that in terms of the daycare aspect of what we're doing, the industrialized way that schools were created to allow people to go to work for 8 hours a day, if you're lucky enough to work 8 hours a day, a lot of those kinds of things can change. But I think it's really important that teachers start to speak up right now. Patricia, I want to hear what you have to say. I see your hand. Sorry. Let me get you unmuted.
Yes,
Patricia,
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I'm quietly sitting here, but I'm enjoying everything you guys are saying.
I lost you. Can you still hear me? Your audio went out. You there? Wait, you got muted again. Let me unmute you.
Oh, okay, I'm here.
There you are. Go ahead. I lost you for a second.
I was saying I was enjoying in everything that you've been sharing. I'm in Baltimore, and the thing that I'm learning as a librarian right now as well is that every day there's something new that we're having to do to meet the needs of our patrons. And just like education, we have to do what meets the need at this exact moment. And I was a homeschool mom. My girls are 28 and 29 now. But when I started homeschooling, I had them in school for a couple, just four years, three and they were third grade and fourth grade. And what I learned in that time was that I had to change some things. I took them out of school just wanting to do something different with their education. What I learned in that initial step was that I had to change my idea as to what I think was necessary. So right. After 3 months of pulling my hair out, not getting what I wanted to see with their learning at home, because they were still custom of just having a teacher just rotely say whatever they needed, and they weren't actually learning to learn on their own. So long story short, I had to chuck everything I was doing and come up with the plan. And I think that's what we're doing now, right now, for education.
Yeah.
Is we're chucking all of our old way of doing things and say, hey, let's try this. And I think it's okay to try and fail some things, but you got to keep trying. I'm actually enjoying, I've been listening to quite a few educational webinars concerning the changes coming up. And I actually am enjoying the fact that there has to be some changes. And to me, there was always change that was needed in the educational way of teaching all of our children. So really, I'm agreeing with you. We're having connectivity issues with how the kids are receiving online services in Baltimore. We're trying to partner with Comcast to do better with providing services. So I think once we become acceptance of our new normal, I think things will go, you know, we can figure out how to make it work. There are a lot of variables to make concerning moms and working and moms working at home and, you know, daycare for kids. It's a lot of variables. So it's not an easy time. And I think we should all be just go easy on ourselves. But I just wanted to let you know I've been enjoying the whole discussion.
Thank you, Patricia. I appreciate your feedback. Yeah, and I think what Patricia's saying is so important. I think it is the new normal. And I'm thinking about that with my kids. My kids are five. Charlie's five today and Maddie's four. Will be four in September, and thinking about the idea of education and what's important. And I know we touched on this last time, right before our Zoom bomb incident, but so much of the curriculum is old and so much of it is I can remember working in special education. And the one thing that I loved about special ed classrooms was that they always had like a kitchen and a washer dryer, and they would teach the kids how to cook, and they would teach the kids how to do their own clothes, and they would teach the kids how to manage their checkbook if they ever got one. And I remember when I got to college, those were the three things that separated me from every single college student that I was associated with. I knew how to cook for myself. I knew how to clean my own clothes, and I knew how to balance my checkbook. And there's none of that in the current situation. Teaching kids, and we don't even know, gosh knows what the next few years are going to look like. I mean, that's going to be, who knows, but what are we doing in education in terms of this and in terms of focusing on these curriculums that are based on school books that are being sold to us by corporations and people who are telling us what the curriculum should be because we think that's going to be important? And man, I tell you, it is, I thank you, Patricia, for speaking up, because I think it is. We have to take a look at it and make some changes.
Yeah, I think we're missing the boat in a lot of areas, you know, and I think maybe this is rose-colored glasses, but I think that not only are we in a time where we might be more susceptible to being open for some changes, but I also think administrators, from what I, at least over here, I've seen, is that I feel like a lot of administrators are accessing Twitter as their virtual PD or their way of connecting with other administrators. And I feel like there's a face of administration that's starting to evolve a little bit, and it's not it's a good thing. I feel like the things I've read and the people, some of the Twitter accounts I follow, and hearing what the conversations other principals or superintendents are having with each other and the kind of direction they're going is like I said, maybe rose-colored glasses, but I feel like it's promising because I feel like this is a time as educators to be able to speak up. And I feel like they're more susceptible to listen than they have been in the past. I'm not saying all, but I think that it's going in the right direction as far as that goes.
Well, that's good to hear. I know you're doing amazing work. I know you're in touch. I look forward to talking with you again. Lucky Little Learners is a very unique website, but if people want to visit that, luckylittlelearners.com. And I appreciate Patricia and Stephanie for being with us today. And I hope more people get a chance to watch this. We're going to keep the show going. The Connected Classroom is going to go. And like Angie was saying, I think most educators right now are just taking a break and they deserve it. And all of us deserve it. So we're going to keep going forward. We'll probably have Angie back maybe in August if she wants to talk to us again and talk a little bit more about some of the stuff as we get a better sense of what the classroom is going to look like. I don't know, with the spikes that are happening now and all the different stuff. I mean, who knows? I mean, we'll know more when we know more. But I thank you so much for being a part of this and Angie for joining me today. And if you have any questions, obviously you can contact me, rusty@schooltoolstv.com. We have on the Learning Revolution, we have a chat room there for the Connected Classroom so you can connect with each other if you have information. But thank you for everything you're doing. Your boots on the ground, you're doing the hard work. This is going to be the beginning of any change that we see, whether it's in the racial environment or in the economic and the environment of what's going forward. It's going to start with the educators, and I can't thank you enough, and I feel very proud to be a part of it in a very small way. So thanks for all you're doing. Thanks, yeah, Angie.
Thanks, Rusty.
All right, you guys have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
You too.